This Christmas season, Calvary Chapel has hosted multiple parties for ladies, for young adults, for the middle school and high school, for the senior adults, for teachers and for staff. We've had party after party. We've enjoyed Christmas decor and delicious food and oceans of eggnog, some seasonal tunes. Christmas has filled the air. We've interacted with merry people dressed in merry colors, wishing each other a Merry Christmas. I love a good holiday party. It adds to the Christmas joy. Imagine, though, attending one of these Christmas parties. It's in full swing when a guest enters the room. He's an older gentleman, a little gray tints his receding hairline. He's wearing jeans and a denim jacket. He's soft-spoken, but his strong handshake tells you this is a simple, hard-working, blue-collar kind of guy. And when you look into this man's face, you can tell he's having a difficult time with all this celebration. He's not into the party like everyone else. You figure a warm welcome might make him feel more at home. You shake hands with him and you introduce yourself. And that's when he responds politely. "And I'm Joseph of Nazareth. Nice to meet you too." Imagine Joseph of Nazareth at our Christmas party. What if Joseph came to one of our Christmas parties? How do you think he'd act? I think he would mingle with us for a while. He'd see the smiles. He'd hear the laughter. He'd watch all the holly and jolly. But then he'd start to wonder, how did Christmas become so merry? I think he'd come to the point when Joseph would have all the celebration that he could stomach. He would throw up his hands in frustration and shout, "You guys keep saying Merry Christmas. Well, that's easy for you to say." Don't get me wrong. I'm not implying that Joseph was a Scrooge. I'm sure that he was a pleasant enough fellow. But for him, Christmas was anything but a celebration. Christmas for Joseph was full of trepidation, consternation, deliberation, and lots of dedication. I have no doubt the first Christmas had a much different meaning for Joseph than Christmas has for folks today. Christmas through the eyes of Joseph provides us a unique and challenging perspective. You know, before the city of Jacksonville, Florida renovated the dilapidated Gator Bowl, the old stadium had its problems. In December 1989, the temperature in northern Florida dipped below freezing, a rare occurrence for those parts. The old plumbing in the Gator Bowl had the tendency to freeze. That meant that on the day of the big game, the 503 toilets and urinals in the stadium had to be continually flushed to keep the pipes from bursting. The city of Jacksonville hired 23 workers for the sole purpose of walking around the stadium just to flush the toilets. Now, how's that for a real bowl game? Thought you'd like that. On game day, thousands of fans filed into the stadium in a celebratory mood. This was a bowl. This was a reward for a successful season, a festive occasion indeed. For thousands of fans, the mood was lighthearted and jubilant. But for those 23 toilet flushers, it was just another day at the office. Far more duty than party. And that helps illustrate the contrast between Joseph's attitude toward Christmas and ours. See, if Joseph came to our Christmas party, he'd probably act more like a toilet flusher than a party goer. Now, I'm not saying his Christmas was just another day at the office, but for Joseph, I'm sure his first Christmas carried far more responsibility than it did merriment. You know, we think of Christmas as a treat, but for this man, Joseph, Christmas was a test. It was a test of family, it was a test of faith, and it was a test of fortitude. Years ago, someone published a Christmas card that featured a happy family opening presents around a beautifully decorated tree. The inscription on the inside of the card read, "Make merry and send gifts to one another." It's actually a Bible verse, Revelation 11, verse 10. The quote is accurate. The problem, though, is that Revelation 11, verse 10 has nothing to do with Christmas. Revelation 11 predicts the future. It foresees an evil ruler who rises up and takes over the institutions of earth. This dictator is anti-God and anti-Christ. He mounts a full-scale attack of blasphemy and idolatry against God. He leads the world in open rebellion against its creator. In response, God sends two faithful witnesses to testify of his truth. This antichrist murders the good guys in Jerusalem's streets. And Revelation 11, verse 10 tells us, those who dwell on the earth will rejoice over them. And now recall the Christmas card. Make merry and send gifts to one another. It'll be an anti-Christmas in honor of an antichrist. See, we use gift giving to celebrate Jesus. One day, folks will give gifts in defiance of him. And as with this Christmas card, the front, or on the surface, you might say, Christmas is seen as a party. But through the eyes of Joseph, we see it for what it really was and still is, a battle. Good and evil slugged it out. The sword of a madman named Herod and the Bethlehem blood of innocent babies was for Joseph as much a part of Christmas as the appearance of the star and the angel's announcement and the arrival of the shepherds. God made Joseph responsible for dealing with the harsh realities of a wicked, jealous, bloodthirsty world. Through Joseph, God navigated the infant king around angry tyrants to predetermined rendezvous with strange admirers, on to Egypt as precautionary exiles. See, Mary knew the mystery and the marvel of Christmas, whereas Joseph knew the conflict and the combat. Don't get upset with Joseph if he doesn't understand why we're wishing each other a Merry Christmas. He saw Christmas stripped of any cheesy idealism. Joseph held to a harsher, more realistic perspective. See, if Christmas through the eyes of Mary makes us giddy, from Joseph's perspective, Christmas forces us to be more gritty. You could say Mary danced with God, but it was Joseph who had to get her to the dance on time. Joseph added a practicality to Mary's spirituality. Mary praised God. You recall it was Mary who wrote the famous Magnificat. Well, Joseph served God. He swallowed his pride and did the hard thing and signed the birth certificate. Viewing Christmas through the eyes of Joseph will add some consternation to our celebration. Joseph's perspective may not be as pleasant to consider as was Mary's, but if your desire is to be faithful to God in this turbulent world, then it is every bit as profitable. Well, when we examine our text in Matthew and Joseph's assessment of that first Christmas, we realize that it was a test of fidelity to his family. The depth of his devotion to his bride-to-be was severely examined. You know, today the formation of a marriage occurs in two stages. Engagement followed by a marriage ceremony. But in Hebrew culture, it was a three-stage process. The parents saw to the engagement. Marriages were often arranged when children were infants. But then when they came of age, they entered into what the Hebrews called the kedushin, or the betrothal. The kedushin usually lasted a year. It was a binding relationship. In fact, it took a bill of divorcement to end a betrothal. Legally, the couple was considered married, but during this time, they lived under separate roofs, and they were forbidden to engage in sexual relations. Well, at the conclusion of the year, a nishun, or a Hebrew wedding, took place. And this was quite an event. Jewish weddings sometimes last a whole week. At the conclusion of the ceremony, the couple entered the bridal chamber and consummated their marriage. And yet it was during their kedushin or their betrothal period that Joseph discovered that Mary was pregnant. Can you think of a greater test of a man's love for a woman? On the one hand, he imagined some wicked tryst with another man. But this wasn't the Mary that Joseph had grown to know and love. On the other hand, how could he believe this preposterous story that he's being told over and over about this miracle birth? Joseph didn't know what to think. His heart was broken. His plans were ruined. His pride was bruised. You know, the Bible tells us that Joseph was a carpenter by trade. His partners were a level and a builder's square. You know, the craftsman motto is this: measure twice, cut once. Well, you can be sure Joseph measured his next move. He couldn't ignore what had happened. And yet he still loved this Hebrew maiden. The law of Moses allowed him to have her stoned. But Joseph opted to send Mary away privately so she could start over in another village. But it was then, as he grappled with his decision, that an angel visited Joseph in a dream. Verse 20. "Joseph, son of David," he said, "do not be afraid to take Mary your wife, for that which is conceived in her is of the Holy Spirit. And she will bring forth a son, and you shall call his name Jesus, for he will save his people from their sins." And then verse 24 tells us how he reacted. "Joseph, being aroused from sleep, did as the angel commanded him and took to him his wife and did not know her," that is, have sexual relations with her, "till she had brought forth her firstborn son, and he called his name Jesus." With angelic confirmation of his own, Joseph ordered the Nashun, and the couple married. But the text is careful to inform us that Mary remained a virgin until after Jesus was born. With their eventual wedding, a hurdle was crossed and a commitment was sealed. But trust me, the lives of Joseph and Mary were never again what they would call normal. Josh Martinez is a 13-year-old boy who lives in Little Rock, Arkansas. Josh's mom had cancer. She was undergoing chemotherapy, and as a result, she lost her hair. Josh loved his mom and wanted her to know it, so he shaved off his blonde locks as a show of solidarity. Josh's haircut was a wonderful gesture of love and support, but the kids at the school he attended didn't see it that way. Some of the kids accused Josh of being a skinhead. They screamed KKK at him. One day outside the gym, a group of thugs jumped him and beat him up. His mother, wearing her blonde wig, told a reporter, "It was out of love for me that he shaved his head. It's tragic that someone would have to take a beating for a haircut." And of all people, Joseph would have known exactly how Josh Martinez felt. For Joseph took a beating for showing his love and loyalty to his betrothed Mary. Joseph took Mary to be his wife because he loved her and because he trusted God. But don't think for a minute other people saw his actions in the same light. Joseph's marriage and the birth of Jesus carried social consequences far worse than a shaved head. In ancient Israel, very few sins brought greater shame than infidelity and illegitimacy. For the rest of his life, Joseph would father a boy everyone else knew was not really his son. And he would remain faithful to a woman everyone else assumed had been unfaithful to him. Joseph loved the mother and the child, but don't think it was an easy decision to embrace them as his family. Joseph made a difficult commitment. He chose to be a devoted dad and husband, yet for it, he got very little public appreciation. In fact, his reputation took a definite beating. Realize Christmas is a family holiday, not because we Americans have made it such. No, when God sent his son into the world, he entrusted the Savior into the care of a family, not a tribe or a community or a kibbutz or an institution or a commune or a nanny or a school or a trained professional in a child development center, et cetera, et cetera. No, God gave his only son to a family comprised of one man and one woman committed to each other for life. Evidently, God felt that a family could do the best job in rearing his son. God dignified and honored the nuclear family when he sent Jesus into the world. Christmas is as much a celebration of family as it is of faith. And that's why this Christmas, I want to challenge us all to focus on our families. And I'm not talking about trying to buy everyone's affection with cheap gifts. No, Joseph gave himself to his family. He sacrificed his dignity and pride and reputation by embracing a disgraced mother and a stigmatized son. Joseph even left his home in Bethlehem to take the child and his mother to Egypt to escape the jealousy of King Herod. I mean, think of what this meant to Joseph. Who mowed his lawn in Nazareth while he was away? Who tended to all his pet projects? Who used his membership at the fitness center? I would have worried about that for weeks. Or who ran the carpenter shop while he was gone? You mean Joseph put his family before his business? You betcha. There's a small town in Florida where a woman runs a shelter for unwanted boys. She's a poor lady, but she's very kind and loves those boys. Her approach is small budget, but big-hearted. This woman loves the boys that have been placed in her care. Once a prospective couple, they came to the home to interview a child they wanted to adopt. The potential mother asked the boy, "Do you have a bicycle?" He said, "No, ma'am." She continued, "Do you have your own set of rollerblades?" He said, "No, ma'am." She continued, "Do you have a baseball bat? Do you have your own BB gun?" On and on she went. Finally, the little guy, he stopped her and he said, "Ma'am, I'm sorry, but if that's all you're going to give me, I'd rather stay right here." Joseph gave his family the best gift he could give. He gave himself. He gave his all. It reminds me of the army chaplain who returned home from war just in time for Christmas. He'd been overseas for 2 years and hadn't seen his family. His bus pulled in after midnight on Christmas Eve, and rather than wake the kids, Dad and Mom planned a surprise for Christmas morning. All the gifts were stacked up by the hearth, and the father huddled among them. His wife draped a sheet over him so that he blended in with the gifts. The children didn't see Dad. And as the kids started opening their presents, suddenly the sheet began to rustle, and Dad rose up from among the packages. The kids went bonkers. Moms and dads, what would it mean? What would it mean to your children if this Christmas you gave them more of yourself? And kids, how delighted would it make your parents if you chose to spend more time with them this year? See, we all could sacrifice a little more time and attention, set aside our pursuits to be with our family. What would it look like for you and I to let our family know we really care? Perhaps your spouse, like Mary, has been an embarrassment to you. Oh, he's been inappropriate. He's brought shame on your family name. She's done things. She's said things. Maybe a child has humiliated you. Joseph dealt with all these scenarios. He bore a shame caused by his family, yet he didn't stop loving them. Joseph became a major player in the Christmas story only after he realized he was not what mattered. Christmas for Joseph was not about his happiness or his merriment, but about a special mother and a mysterious child. Joseph became a hero because he sensed that two other lives were at stake, more important than his. A spouse and a child were hanging in the balance, dependent upon him for his protection. If you're a spouse or if you're a parent, Joseph should remind you that it's no longer just about you. George Mason was a bank president whose whole life revolved around his business. He lived alone, had no time for family, had even turned down his brother's invitation to Christmas dinner. On Christmas Eve, he was locking up his bank when he walked into the vault to get some extra cash. The huge door swung shut, and George Mason was locked inside his own vault. Well, at first, he sensed a panic. That is, until he found the safety air hole. Since he had declined all Christmas invitations, no one would think it strange that he was missing. There was nothing else that he could do except sit back and wait out the next 48 hours. George Mason spent Christmas Eve and Christmas Day surrounded by what he loved most, his money. But he soon discovered that all the bank's money couldn't ease his loneliness, couldn't convey to him a warmth. And by the time the bank reopened and George was rescued from the vault, his attitude had changed. He wrote these words and he hung them in his office so he would never forget the lesson he'd learned. To love people, to be indispensable somewhere, that is the purpose of life. That is the secret of happiness. This was no doubt Joseph's attitude. To love people, to be indispensable somewhere. This prompted him to pack up his whole life, as well as a woman with child, put him on the back of a burro and travel to Bethlehem. See, Christmas through the eyes of Joseph is all about accepting responsibility for the people you love and committing yourself to them for the long haul, even when it's inconvenient for you. Christmas is about giving yourself away. It's about you belonging to others. But Christmas through the eyes of Joseph was not only a test of family, it was also a test of faith. Should Joseph believe? Would he believe? Could he believe? All he had to go on was the word and a word. You see, the word was Isaiah 7, verse 14. For there the prophet had predicted, "Behold, a virgin shall be with child and bear a son, and they shall call his name Emmanuel." Oh, Joseph knew this name, Emmanuel. Didn't it mean God with us? And a word, an angel appeared to him and told him, "For that which is conceived in her is of the Holy Spirit." The word and a word kept bouncing around in Joseph's heart. Would that be enough for him to believe? Did you hear about the elephant who was enjoying a swim down the river? He was playing and splashing and spewing water everywhere, having a trunk load of fun. When all of a sudden a mouse appeared on the beach. This little mouse was in great distress. He started yelling at the elephant to get out of the water. The elephant didn't want to end his swim, but the mouse kept screaming. Well, finally, the elephant realized that if he wanted any peace and quiet, he was going to have to get out of the river and see what the mouse wanted. With his huge pachyderm, he lumbers up onto the bank, and towering over the little mouse, he says, "Now, what do you want?" The mouse replied, "Oh, that's okay. I just wanted to see if you were wearing my bathing suit." Now, that's a terrible joke, but that's a great illustration. For actually, it is easier to imagine a huge elephant in a mouse bathing suit than it is to comprehend an infinite God wrapped in human flesh and bone and blood, and who became the tiniest and the weakest of human beings. Imagine that. God became man. Listen to one author's description of the mystery. The omnipotent made himself breakable. He who had been spirit became pierceable. He who was larger than the universe became an embryo. He who sustains the world with a word chose to be dependent upon the nourishment of a young girl. God became a fetus. Do I understand it? No way. Do I believe it? For sure. It is a sad, shallow, self-obsessed person who believes only what they can grasp with their own little minds. Do you really understand how a simple acorn can fall to the ground and in time become a giant oak tree? Who does? Can you explain the mystery of DNA? Or how the brain turns chemistry into thoughts? Or the development of language in our little ones? So much in this physical realm is a mystery. Now, to comprehend the spiritual realm, how can you reduce to terms the unrestricted, unbounded power of God? Or try to dissect the intricacies of God's triune nature? Or the wisdom that spawned our salvation? Or the logic behind God's love for us? All these things are impossible for us to completely grasp. See, the real question that Joseph had to answer was not, do you believe a virgin can conceive, or can the divine become human? No, it was rather, are you going to limit the power and potentials of an almighty God? And are you? In a sense, it wasn't much to go on. The word and a word. But in another sense, it's all any of us need to go on. For it is a word from God, and it is the word of God. Christmas through Joseph's eyes was a test of faith. Christmas challenges us. Do we know where our logic ends and where God's omniscience begins? Do we recognize our limits and God's limitlessness? Do we recognize our resources as finite and God's as infinite? For Joseph, Christmas was a time to stop figuring how or formulating why and engage his soul in trust. Do you trust God? Christmas is about believing in God's promises, being astonished at God's power, and trusting in God's grace. Through Joseph's eyes, Christmas was a test. It was a test of family. It was a test of faith. And finally, it was a test of fortitude. How strong was this man's commitment? In verse 24, we're told, then Joseph, being aroused from sleep, did as the angel of the Lord commanded him and took to him his wife. And this will not be the last occasion when God arouses Joseph from a deep sleep out of a concern for his wife and his child. Remember, it happens again in Matthew 2. After Jesus is born, the angel appears a second time to Joseph and tells him to flee the madness of King Herod, pack up and escape with his young family to the safety of Egypt. But that was just the beginning of his sleepless nights. For all fathers get aroused from sleep from time to time out of a concern for their families. A creak in the night. Okay, honey, I'll go check on it. The baby cries. Okay, honey, I guess I'll go get him. A car squeals its tires. Okay, better check that out. It's past the boys' curfew. Getting roused from sleep is a rite of parenthood. See, the question was, would Joseph stick with it for the long haul? See, we get a clue as to its answer in verse 25. Joseph did not know her till she had brought forth her firstborn son. And understand what that meant practically. Did you know Joseph took a cold shower on his wedding night? That's a tough way to start a marriage. Yet it was just the beginning. For several months into the marriage, Joseph took cold showers in obedience to God's command. He had all the duties and responsibilities of marriage, yet was forbidden one of its chief pleasures. Joseph made the startling discovery, as all new parents and new spouses do, that the commitment that he had just made was going to greatly complicate his life. But he embraced those changes, and he stuck with his obligations. In fact, 8 days after the child is born, Joseph and Mary, they take the boy to the Jewish temple to have him circumcised and to name him before God. And again, Joseph follows orders precisely. He resists the urge, and it was an urge, to go with Joey Jr. You know he was tempted to do that. But rather, he obeyed God, and he named his son, as the angel of the Lord had instructed him, Jesus. In Joseph's first 3 years of marriage, he pushed his way through busy city streets and cleared out cow patties in a stable so his wife would have a place to deliver a baby. He abandoned his carpentry business, left his hometown, became an outcast and an outlaw. He moved 3 times, struggled to understand Egyptian, looked hard to find work in a foreign country. All that and more is why Christmas, through Joseph's eyes, was a test of fortitude and courage, stick-to-it-ness, and toughness. The English word reliable is a compound word. Liable means responsible. The suffix re means over and over again. And what a word to depict Joseph. He never tired of his responsibilities. He honored his commitment to his family over and over and over again. In the end, this man, Joseph, proved reliable. I'm telling you, Joseph wasn't flashy. This wasn't a charmer. He wasn't charismatic or articulate or witty. Yet God found in Joseph a man who listened to heaven and then did as he was told. And he did it over and over and over again. In God's eyes, that made Joseph no ordinary Joe. Joseph was obedient to God and faithful to his wife and family. And in today's world, that is extraordinary. It's interesting, after Joseph turned 12 years old, we read nothing else. After Jesus turned 12 years old, we read nothing else of Joseph. Most Bible scholars believe Joseph died before Jesus began his ministry. Did he come down with a fever? Did he die of a heart attack? It's not like Joseph was under any undue stress or pressure. All he had to do was protect and provide and nurture the Son of God. Joseph carried a heavy load. Joseph from Nazareth didn't live a very long life, but can you imagine a more fulfilling and significant life? Talk about a contribution. The earthly Father of God might just be the grandest gig in the Christmas story. God chose this man, Joseph, for the most important mission any man has ever been assigned. Apparently, God is pleased with a person endeared to family, engaged by faith, and energized with fortitude. Author Max Lucado has a chapter on Joseph in his book, God Came Near. It's entitled, Limb Climber or Branch Sitter. Lucado concludes that Joseph was not a branch sitter, that he wasn't content to stay close to the trunk, that he valued obedience over convenience, that what mattered to Joseph was what mattered to God. And when God called this man to climb out to the end of the shaky, flimsy limb, he was willing to go, no questions asked. Over the years, when the winds blew and the leaves fell, Joseph stayed out on the end of that limb. Joseph was faithful. Again, the memorial to Joseph's life are in the words in verse 24. He did as the angel of the Lord commanded him. The man followed orders. This Christmas, we all should add some examination to our celebration. What about you and me? Do we hang out next to the trunk of the tree? Do we always play it safe? Or are we willing to go out on the limb with God, to serve Him, to love our families, to honor our commitments? Hey, are you a branch sitter or are you a limb climber? It's been said, if we learn anything from the Christmas story, let it be courage. Christmas is a feast day for the stout of heart. It's a call not just to bake cookies and sip cider, but to be strong, to proclaim our faith more boldly, and to make real sacrifices for our relationship with God. Joseph embodied that courage. When you see Christmas through the eyes of Joseph, you see another side of worship. Mary's love was emotional, but Joseph's love was practical. Joseph's was a get-her-done kind of love. His love for God and family was rooted in responsibility and expressed in his actions. As we've noted, Joseph wasn't particularly talented or gifted. In one sense, he was just very, very ordinary. But when convinced of the truth and called by God, the man stepped up. And that's what a real man does. Now you know why Joseph would be puzzled if he dropped in on our Christmas party and heard us greeting each other, "Merry Christmas." Christmas through Joseph's eyes was anything but merry. It was a test of family and of faith and of fortitude. And the good news is that the grades are still out on us. Our testing isn't over. There's still time for you and me to look at Christmas through the eyes of Joseph. It's not complicated. Just listen to heaven, then do what God says do. And that'll make you no ordinary Joe.